Welcome, geeks and nerds, girls and boys, to a brand new episode of Geek to Me Radio. Tonight, we've got Dustin from Viva Loreto in talking about a brand new event they've got coming up a week from today that you can go to if you're a retro game fan, and if you like craft brews, this will be the thing you want to go to. Later on tonight, we'll have my interview with actor, comedian, writer John Cleese. All that plus a Kokomo Toys giveaway. Stand by.
We're talking TV, comics and movies, and video games. Star Trek from Star Wars, we'll try to explain. There are 12 doctors, 4 Hogwarts houses, 1 ring rules and more. To be the greatest Pokemon master, you must catch them all. You must catch them all. Try to catch them all. Gotta catch.
If you're driving around the greater St. Louis area tonight listening to us on the Big 550 KTRS, hello to all of you. Thank you very much for tuning in. If you are streaming us out there in the world on the KTRS app or online, hello, and thank you for finding us. No video tonight. My executive producer, Joey V, abandoned me to go to see some tawdry comedian. So that's all right. I hope he's having a good time. He does a lot for me and for the show. So anytime he needs a night off, that is always more than acceptable as far as I'm concerned. Hope he's having a lot of fun. Hopefully he'll be back next week and we'll get some video back up. Until then, it's just old school radio, which is always fun too. I don't have to worry about how I look, which is nice for all of you who happen to watch. We want to make sure we get our Kokomo Toys giveaway in. I missed it last week. So if you are listening right now, anywhere in our listening area, I'll ship it wherever it goes. We'll give a nice prize package from Kokomo Toys. If you've never been to Kokomo Toys in Kokomo, Indiana, this place is amazing. I always say it's one where I want to be my ashes scattered when I die. They've got everything you want, toys from the 50s, 60s, 70s. And I realize I used to say, and from today, but now it's 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, the 2000s, the 2010s, and today, because there's two decades that I completely forget about for some reason. But they've got Funko Pops, they've got the old metal Hot Wheels, they've got Star Wars toys, He-Man toys, some loose, some in the package. Price ranges go all across the board because it's all about whether or not you want one loose. I just want this for my kids to play with, or no, this is going to go in my secret vault in my panic room of my mansion. Then you can spend a little bit more for your toys, perhaps. But it's a really cool place. They do great posts on social media, too, so if you get the chance to check them out, Kokomo Toys on social media across all the platforms. It's really cool to see what they've got going in there. And if you're anywhere in the Indianapolis area, make sure you check out their store, sign their little guest book so they know where you're from, and pick up some cool things while you're there. I try to make these easy because someone said I make the questions too hard. So right now, the first person to text us on the KTRS text lines at 84126, since we've got someone in talking about retro games tonight, here's what you have to do. Who is the mascot for Nintendo? When you think of Nintendo, who is the Italian plumber type mascot? I'll accept either of two answers, and the first person to text that answer to us at 84126, we'll get back to you at the end of the show. We'll get your information, your address, and send you a nice prize package courtesy of our partners, Kokomo Toys in Kokomo, Indiana. We'll keep an eye on the text lines throughout the night. Who is the mascot for Nintendo? With that said, we've got Dustin Bryson in with us talking about their Viva La Retro. It's an event that you can go check out. And it's open. You just have to get your tickets, which I think you can be purchased at the door as well, yes?
Correct, yes.
So, Dustin, thank you for joining us. Tell us a little bit about the event.
Yeah, we're really excited. We've got an event coming up here in the St. Charles area, greater St. Louis area, called Viva La Retro. And as the name says, you know, we're all about that retro life. And so we've got 16 vendors. They're going to be coming in from all over the Midwest, and they're going to be selling everything from old NES, Nintendo, you know, handhelds, Sega stuff, PlayStation, you know, if you name it, they've got it. We've got an artist coming in who's going to be like live sketching, just really exciting stuff to bring back to life your childhood. If you're basically my age, I'm 49 years old. And when I get to see the G.I. Joe stuff, when I get to see the Transformers Generation 1, when I get to see the when I see NES cartridges. I don't even have to play it. I can just see the artwork.
Oh yeah,
and it just makes me like it just makes me go to a place in my brain from when I was a kid, and I have these memories, and they're so exciting. So this is going to be a very special place, special to my heart. I believe special to your heart too.
Oh yeah,
Two Plumbers. It's an arcade brewery. They brew their own beer there, and then of course they've got arcades and pins, and it's just a beautiful place. Well, they were always in one place in our town in Greater St. Charles. And they've just moved. They bought a building, and now they are in their own building, two-story, and the upstairs is an event space. And so we're one of the very first events that's going to happen November 19th, and it's going to be you're going to be able to come in, and everything on the second floor, all the arcades on the second floor are free play. You can come and play, and then, of course, you got to buy your own beer. But, you know, it's just going to be a great time. We're going to have a bunch of people there selling fun stuff that you've maybe never seen in real life. Maybe you've seen on the internet or maybe you've wanted to collect. But if that's your cup of tea, this is going to be the space for you. It's the second time we've done this event. The last event we did was called Retro Swap Midwest, and that was in our little 1,500 square feet, our little space. And we brought in, I think, six vendors for that. And it was really fun. It's just really fun community. It's a fun group to be a part of because there's just different kinds of people that like different things. Some people, like you said in your intro, love to collect and they want it in a plastic box. They never want to play it. They want to get it graded so it's in this, you know, poly. I don't even know what the thing's made
out
of.
Yeah, some kind of plastic, the hard plastic hardcore, shell. They get it AFA graded or whatever
that's
it is with video games. Yeah.
Yeah, they love it. They get it graded and it sits on a shelf. They don't play it. But they it just seeing the art on the outside of the box makes them happy, knowing that you know that there's value to it. Like now this has been graded, so it's got more value than it did previous. That's some collectors love that. And then other people just want Lucy's, man. They just want to grab that game and go home and play it because they remember Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or they remember, you know, Excitebike or whatever it was that was their jam. And they just want to go home and play it. And they want to share it with their kids. And young people now, which is so rad, are getting into it super big. So young people like, you know, my kids' age or even younger are just, I don't understand it because it's not nostalgic for them. It's nostalgic for us.
Yeah, that is kind of a weird phenomenon.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, I was a weird kid. Like, I would watch reruns of Mannix, and my mom's like, what are you doing watching the show I grew up watching? I'm like, it's just, it's cool.
Yeah.
But my niece, who is 18 now, had no connection to the original Nintendo. She's obsessed with Zelda. And when she found out I had an original retro NES, she's like, do you have the original Zelda, the gold cartridge? I'm like, how do you know about that?
Right.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, but I think it was the same way with me. I mean, MASH, if you remember that show, like MASH, and there's these other shows that would come on, and I really liked them, you know, Twilight Zone. But they were definitely before my time.
Yeah.
You know, but I still thought they were so cool. I don't know why, but I guess that's the same kind of thing. So, we're really excited. We don't, you know, we're not necessarily event guys. I mean, we do throw events every once in a while. I've done a comedy show and some other things that we've put on, but our main like kind of bread and butter, if you will, is it's called Public Art Company. We're a creative agency. We design. We're a creative marketing agency. We do a lot of marketing work for brands, logo design, stuff like that. But then we also really one of the fun things we get to do is we get to illustrate beer cans. It is fun. And we've gotten to do stuff for Two Plumbers and other local breweries. And it's just a really fun, you know, thing we get to do. It's like having a cartoon on a can. And so we get to do that, which is fun. And so one of the things, but, you know, if you're in the creative world, if you're doing creative work, sometimes you get bored with the same stuff over and over. And so being able to do an event is pretty rad. Like, because it has a start date, a marketing date, and then an end date. And you can do it again if it was successful. If it wasn't successful, you can go, well, let's try something else.
Yeah, yeah. So. And I think with these events, too, because there are those people, like, I'm right in the middle. Like, you talked about the people who want to keep it in the pristine packaging, the other people who just want the loose. When I've picked up a game here or there, but I want the box with it. I want the manual at least in decent shape without a bunch of markings on it. But I want it open so I can plug it in because I actually do play the game. I just got the original NES Uncanny X-Men, and I realize I'm sitting there playing. I'm like, this is the worst game ever. But it's that nostalgia factor of playing it, and you get to pick which pair you're, you know, Iceman and Cyclops,
right,
you're going to have. But there's and Metroid for me is always one I will go back and sit down and play
Love it.
Metroid Castlevania is another one.
Contra.
Yes, Contra, yeah. Russian Attack.
Right.
Yeah. And the cool thing is, because we've had Rob, who owns Two Plumbers, in here before for their, when they had the gaming exhibit at the Foundry out in St. Charles. And it's cool to walk in his place and see all the actual coin-op arcade games, because they've still got that art on the side of the cabinets.
Yeah.
And that takes you back.
It feels very much like it did when, I mean, when you were a kid, a bunch of us have sat around and tried to talk about, like, what is it that we're feeling and experiencing in these moments. But there's something about the endorphins. There's something about the pocket full of quarters, mm-hmm. or knowing that you have a $5 bill that you're going to chase. Even hearing the quarter machine drop the $5 worth, there was something about that excitement, and I can't explain it. I don't know what it was. It was probably a very 80s and 90s thing. There was girls there, which, you know.
There was. It was at the mall, the one I went to. That's right.
It was at the mall, and there was a food court, and there was all the other stuff. But the girls would come in. They like video games too, and maybe they didn't, maybe it wasn't like how we liked them. Maybe, I don't know. I'm not a girl, but, they would come in, and then, so there was always even that, like, this sort of like, I can show off a little bit if I'm really good at Asteroids or Pac-Man.
Yeah.
And, it was, maybe it was a sense of freedom. I don't know what it was, but there was something about the arcade that was different than, that's what I would say. It was like when you got on your bike and you just rode with your buddies and you just knew you had maybe it was the baseball card store or the little store and the thing you're going to get some candy. Like, there was something about that freedom. It just made you feel like, I could take on the world. And I felt like that when I'd go to the arcade.
Did you grow up in this area?
No,
or
I didn't.
Out of St. Louis? Or yeah. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the Pacific Northwest.
Okay.
In a suburb of Seattle.
Okay.
And, but yeah, I mean, it was the same thing. The mall with the 90s and the food court and all of it, just still now. I mean, the young people don't, you know, now outdoor malls or, you know, whatever is the cool thing, which I get, but
are they,
I don't know. I mean, it's not the same.
This year we're celebrating the 40th anniversary of Dragon's Lair, which I was, again, a child, but this game looks so cool. And all the people who were probably older than me, obviously, and they're, you know, 12, 13, 14 and up, were playing this game. I had to play this game. My mom was like, you're going to waste $1 because you're going to die in 2 seconds. And I did, because I didn't have the coordination to play that. But now you look at that game and you're like, I still have the coordination to play it.
But no one cares about – here's the thing about that game, like, to me at least, is I wanted to watch the intro videos.
Yeah.
Because that was the first game you'd put that quarter in and it was a cartoon.
Yeah, exactly.
It was not 6-bit or 8-bit. It was a cartoon that would play – and then you'd get into your gameplay, which was not a cartoon.
No, and I was horrible.
But it was, that blew my mind. I remember the first time I saw it. It was on par with like seeing Jurassic Park and seeing the CGI the first time.
Yeah.
And going,
it was groundbreaking because it was the first Laserdisc based game that was anything like that. And they did the same thing with Space Ace, I think. Was it the following year?
I'm not sure.
Dragon's Lair was first, I thought.
Yeah,
Space Ace.
I believe Dragon's Lair was first. Yeah. I remember the day that I saw it, and I felt like you know, all of humanity parted, and angels like lit it up, and
a beam of light shining down on the Dragon's Lair arcade.
Yeah, it was incredible.
And that was my. Well, I was going to ask you if you lived in the area where your arcade was, because I grew up in North County, so we'd go to Jamestown Mall. They had Aladdin's Castle at Jamestown Mall. And I'd make my mom buy me a Hot Sam's pretzel, and then into the arcade we'd go.
Yeah, I'd go to the South Kitsap Mall, which is in Kitsap County, and that was where we had arcade. I don't think it had a cool name or anything. I think it just said arcade, like in neon.
Okay.
Which that's all you needed.
Yeah.
I didn't need it to be branded to know what I was about to get myself into.
And I love seeing the people on social media who have built their own arcades in their basement. Like, I think it's called at Broken Arcade on Twitter. I might be wrong. If you're listening, sir, I apologize. Has a great setup, but he's got the carpeting that looks like it's right out of the 80s. You know, it's that stylized pink and purple and blue hues that are in triangle designs. It's so cool. He's got the neon lights. So, yeah, that's how when I grew up, that's what I'm going to have.
Yeah, what we found is that, like, what the age that we are now, with when you came across finally disposable income, and you couldn't get those things that you wanted as a kid, but now you have the finances to do it. That's where a lot of these folks are starting to show up to collect. Now, a lot of them are prospecting, too. They're saying, well, I'm going to buy this thing, and it's going to be worth more later.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not a fan of that. If you get something because you enjoy it, because a lot of I'm seeing it in the comic book market, people are jacking up the prices because they're going in and buying up. I'm going to buy 18 of these, and right. One day I'm like, well, now you've ruined it because now other people who want the comic to read it. But that's another story from another time.
But it'll ebb and flow.
Yeah,
it'll ebb and flow. There'll be the next, you know, there'll be, oh, now we want to do gold bars, and somebody else right. They'll prospect some other way. I just think it's interesting because I don't know that anybody's going to. I mean, I'm not arguing with you because you're definitely the man when it comes to understanding this stuff better than me. But, you know, I think you're not going to go buy a, you know, very, very expensive Mario. I mean, maybe you are, but you're not going to buy a $50,000 Mario prospecting.
I'm not.
Yeah, no. But I mean, like, you know, you might buy it because you love it. I don't know. I mean,
hopefully.
You know, the thing about for me, like, I actually don't play video games. I mean, I co-own a video game store and I don't. Play video games very often, but I absolutely love looking at them. I love the art.
Yeah.
I love the boxes. Anything G.I. Joe from the A Real American Hero sort of like line that, what is it? I want to say 84 to 92, something like that line. That is, anything, it just, it brings me to life, man. Yeah. I love it.
No, I love looking at the. That's why I like the cards, and they had that retro thing. Hard to believe they were just celebrating the 25th anniversary of G.I. Joe not that long ago, because those cards were out, and here we're coming up already since that line has come out. So somehow we're celebrating the 40th.
40th, yeah.
Wow, did that happen?
Yeah. We got old. That's what happened.
Sadly, yes, that's more true than I'd like to admit. I do apologize. I was neglecting the text lines. We had some people come through on my answer for who was the spokesperson, the mascot, if you will, for Nintendo. And I specified there are two possible answers. They are Italian plumbers. And we have our friend from the 636 area code said Mario. That is correct. We have a person from the 314 said Donkey Kong, and I get what you're saying, but because I specified Italian plumber, that's why I did that specifically, so there wasn't any mistake, because I can see where Donkey Kong could be the answer, but that's why I went ahead and specified Italian plumbers. And another gentleman was just, or lady, was a little bit too late in getting the Mario answer there as well, so I appreciate all of you listening. Our friend from the 636 area code will be getting a text or a call here at our commercial break, and I'll get your information so that we can send you that prize pack, courtesy of our friends at Kokomo Toys in Kokomo, Indiana. With that said, we are going to take a very quick commercial break.
This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. You're listening to Geek to Me Radio.
Welcome back to the show. Geek to Me Radio, heard here every Sunday on the Big 550 KTRS. I'm your host, James Enstall. Ever since Kevin passed away, man, it's been a year, and I'm still not over it. I'm heartbroken that we lost my voice of Batman, Kevin Conroy. I'm so fortunate that we had him on the show so many times, and man, it's never easy losing someone, but when that someone's such an integral part of your childhood, and then you get to know the person, it hurts even more so. Ever since he's passed, we've always played his return liner at least once per show. And of course, if you're a Batman fan, hopefully you went out and visited Bugs Comics and Games in O'Fallon, right there off of Bryan Road. They had their big two-year anniversary sale, so huge congratulations again to Larry Quiggins, my friend and the owner of Bugs Comics and Games, on their two-year anniversary. Big sale, 50% off everything in the store. Hopefully you got out there and got whatever that I left you after I left there on Saturday and got some X-Men comics and filled those couple holes I was missing in my Excalibur collection and stuff like that. But they've got a lot of stuff out there. If you didn't make it out for the sale, go check them out. If you're a comic collector and you want to save some money and not give up your hobby because the economy, let's face it, isn't great right now, join their Avengers Club. You automatically start saving money on your books, your back issues, your games, your toys, whatever it is you might be collecting. Save some money and enjoy your hobby at the same time. Larry knows everything there is to know about comic books from the golden age on up to current. So if you're new to comic collecting, you don't know what you want to collect, you're kind of, I just went out and saw the Marvels in theater, but I don't really know. He'll show you, okay, Monica Rambeau made her first appearance here in this annual of Amazing Spider-Man. You might want to read some backstory of Marvel, the original Captain Marvel, or you can read Avenging Spider-Man number 8, where Carol Danvers first becomes Captain Marvel. Whatever it is you want to check out, Larry will point you in the right direction. And if you are wanting to divest yourself of your collection, maybe you've gotten to that point where, you know what, I just got too much stuff, Larry is always buying comics, and he'll give you the best price in town for your collection, which is one of the reasons I like going there, because he's always got new back issues. And it's not a comic book store if you don't have back issues. Sorry, not sorry. That's just my opinion. So go check him out on Bryan Road. Give their Facebook page a like, Bugs Comics and Games on Facebook. And he just started Instagram. So if you're on Instagram, follow him there. Bugs Comics and A-N-D spelled out Games on Instagram. He's posting stuff there. If you're not in the greater St. Louis, St. Charles area, you can buy some stuff there. He's going to start posting more and more. He's brand new to Instagram, so he's going to get acclimated and start posting there. So even if you're not in the greater St. Louis, St. Charles area, let Bugs Comics and Games be your local comic book store. Bugs Comics and Games, very proud to have them as our official sponsor here on Geek to Me Radio. We still have Dustin Bryson in the studio with us talking about the Viva La Retro event coming up here. And I think in my post, so those of you who follow me on social media, I apologize. I thought it was Saturday. It's Sunday, a week from today, and it's an all-day event, or is it? When does it start and end?
It is, yeah. I should probably know the answer to this. I believe it starts at 10. It might be 11. So please, please check our social media.
Now that I'm thinking about it,
11
to
6, I believe, is what it is on the 19th. Right. Because we have to have time for it's a brand new venue and they're testing some things out. So we have to have time to get our vendors in and out.
Gotcha. And if you're listening to this after the fact in the podcast form, if you scroll down to the bottom of the page, my executive producer, Joey V, who is brilliant, will put a link to the Eventbrite site so that you can get your tickets online, but there will be tickets available at the door. It's just a slightly higher price to get at the door, correct?
Yep, that's correct.
And this is an event, I know Two Plumbers has those great craft brewery. They got all their beers and everything like that. Don't bring your own beverages in probably, though. Is that correct?
No, yeah. We don't want you to bring your own beverages because you're just going to be missing out on the wonderful things that the Two Plumbers does. They have a fantastic line, and it's not just beer. They've got some mixed drinks. They've got soda, local soda, and I believe they even have some wines. So
nice. Okay.
I mean, you're gonna have a great time. The place has so many video games. If you've probably been to a arcade brewery before, maybe if you're into that sort of thing, maybe not like Two Plumbers. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that is because I mean Two Plumbers is owned by a husband and wife and then a brewer named John. And it is a guy who is passionate about brewing beer, a chemist who's passionate about brewing beer, and then also a husband, a gentleman who named Rob, who is just passionate about collecting and owning arcades and pins. And so it's not like one guy's into two things. Not to say that they're not both into the other thing, but it was a beautiful marriage of two fellas who, you know, just really wanted to do this thing together, and they both had their own passions. And so it is every game you could want to play. I mean, maybe not every game, but I mean, they have
some a lot.
Incredible pinball game, you know, machines and arcades. And then they also have some really great beer. So we're going to have two floors going. The downstairs floor is their normal brewery space and arcade. Those games will be quarter fed regular games, but on the second floor, when you pay to get in, those games will all be free play, and we'll be able to, you know, and we'll have a bar upstairs as well.
Okay,
so you'll be able to score your pint if you'd like, and walk around and just really enjoy the camaraderie and we really want to grow this. So because it's, you know, we're moving into the winter months and this event space is just opening. We wanted to be one of the first in because we love them and they're good friends of ours and we care about what they're doing. But also because we were ready to do this, but we also have plans in the future to do this event there again and to have indoor and outdoor vendors in the spring. So we'll be able to open it up. We actually had to have a waiting list for vendors this time. And so we'd like to have more. We'd like to bring in, you know, even more Pokemon and other things that people are interested in and in the community.
And with an event like this, you mentioned the vendors who are coming in because you just said, you know, you've actually got a wait list of people. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a mix of toys and retro video games.
Correct.
Like that too?
Yes, correct. And you know, the first time we did this, when we did it in our warehouse, it was sort of like a warehouse sale, but we brought in vendors. You know, we didn't know for sure. We had one a vendor come in who was just particularly interested in Japanese games, so import games. So that's all that
like
person
for the
sold.
Famicom kind of a thing.
Famicom, okay. That's right. Yeah, and then also some handheld stuff that I'd never even seen before. So it was really interesting. And you know, I'm looking at a Mario, like a Dr. Mario, for instance, that I know what that game looks like and plays like on the American version of the systems.
Yeah.
But it, you know, it looks the same, but it's not shaped the same, and it's all obviously in Japanese, which is cool. You know, it's neat to see. And so this time we're also going to have comic. We're going to have some comic books there.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And then we're also there's going to be an artist there that's going to be that sells their own one-off. You know. One of a kind art that also will be drawing while they're there. So interesting stuff. And then the goal is just to continue to grow it, you know, in the future, indoor and outdoor.
And like you and I talked about off air before we started, I've not been to their new location, but this is something that the upstairs where you're gonna have all the free play is that normally, and that's their normal event space. And then downstairs is their regular coin op games.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. Upstairs is coin op games as well, but obviously they're just set to free play. And they kind of go around the perimeter of the space, and then in the interior is tables. One wall is a bar, and in the they're going to do all kinds of stuff there. They want, you know, they're going to be doing weddings and themed things of this nature. What we would like to see for Viva La Retro in the future is we would actually like to start, you know, maybe end off, do it for a full weekend, maybe end off with a band. Maybe have some speakers, maybe have some talent in the voice over world, or sign an autograph. We don't know. The sky's the limit, but we're excited. We've done a couple events in St. Charles already, and they've been really well accepted and attended. And so we're excited to see what maybe we can do in the future. And the community's great. I mean, you know, I mean, the community, it's like, it's almost like none other because there's this camaraderie and this instant bond in all things geek, right?
Yeah.
So there's an acceptance that's immediate.
Yeah.
Which I think is really cool.
No, I feel like, and that to your point, there's, you know, depending on your fandom, there's people out there, and depending on which side you are, you call the other fandom the toxic, like Star Wars is an example. People who have kind of been split over that now. But I feel like the gaming community, I know, I don't feel like there's really much like that. I feel like, oh, you like Mario? That's cool. I like Castlevania. Or, you like Breath of the Wild? I like, you know, this other Zelda game. So
yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
It is very accepting. We just got a text came in from the 314 area code. They wanted to know, hey, guys, quick question. Do you remember a game that was similar to Pac-Man, but it involved police officers catching criminals? It wasn't Cops and Robbers, was it? That sounds too simple. But I seem to remember in our... I assume my friend who's texting us here, was it an arcade game, or do you remember it being for a console? If you have a chance to text us back, let us know, because that's going to narrow it down. But I feel like there was some kind of a Cops and Robbers style arcade game that I remember way back, but I can't think of what the name of it was right now.
Yeah, I actually, it's not coming to me right off the top of my head either, but there was like an MS-DOS game I remember too.
Okay, maybe that was... very early on.
Yeah. Okay. It was a clone. Let's see. I'm going to look it up on my telephone.
All right. That's allowed.
Google.
This is an actual trivia. So.
Google works. I remember vaguely what you're talking about, but I'd have to really do some deep dive before I would be able to pull that out. And that's the beauty of it, right? Like, we all have these very specific memories when we were kids. My big, like, claim to fame as a kid was on the Atari. I could flip asteroids as many times as anybody wanted. So I would, my cousins would get together and want me to flip it, and I'd charge them $5, and I'd play it till it was, went back to the, that's the only game I've ever been great at.
Okay.
And that was just because I figured, you know, every game is just a algorithm. It's just math.
Yeah.
And it's figuring out the rhythm, and I figured out the rhythm on that game, and so I was able to do it. But back to the camaraderie piece, you know, when we opened the game store, it was incredible how many people would come and just how long they would hang out. And so we put in consoles and CRT TVs and old couches like you had in your basement, so you can come and just sit and play. We have arcades that are free on free play. You can come play. You know, you can come play Pac-Man or Bart, you know, or The Simpsons or Foreplay, you know, however you want to do. But it's just been really fun to have people come hang out. And then also the idea that in this community, people will take your recommendation and think about it and maybe try it. Whereas in other communities I'm a part of, there's more maybe, I don't want to say beef, but
resistance?
Maybe resistance is the right word. Like, you know, they've got it figured out,
right?
You know? And I found in this community, it's not like that. It's people,
they're
really listening, and they're, the friendship just happens kind of over some laughs about, you know, how often you died at Donkey Kong or Pac-Man or whatever it was that you couldn't do.
It was always the conveyor belt level that got me in Donkey Kong. Like, I'd make it through the one where you have to hop around, the hoppers are coming down the thing at you. I made it past that, but man, that conveyor belt level was always the rough one for me on Donkey Kong.
Yeah, I remember I was the first kid in my neighborhood that got the original NES, the Nintendo Entertainment System, and that was unusual because I grew up with a single mom, and we weren't the kids with money. I wasn't a kid with money. But I got it for Christmas. I was told I wasn't going to get it. I got it. And then my mom was so bad. Her hand-eye coordination was so atrocious. We had a 13-inch television with three channels with rabbit ears. And I'm pretty sure it was color. I'm not 100%. But I would have to sit on the couch upside down. So where your feet normally go, I would drape, you know, my head would be there.
Right.
My legs would go over where your back and head go. And then I would have to turn the controller upside down and backwards when we were playing Super Mario, and I'd still just throttle my mom. She just could not get the jump when the mushroom was coming to get you. So I still think that's a funny. But now that's how my kid is. We play FIFA, and my 16-year-old son, I'm terrible.
Yeah.
I'm terrible.
Yeah. Too many buttons on these new controllers.
I agree.
You got five different buttons. Come on. Get off my lawn. We have another caller or text person. Same texter. They said the Cops and Robbers was an arcade game. Oof. And they want to know, do you remember the game Adventure on the Atari 2600? And our caller flipped Galaga games as well. I don't remember Adventure. I didn't have an Atari 2600. I had an Atari 800 computer, actually.
Yeah.
We put in the cartridges. We had Missile Command. We did have Pac-Man. And I feel like we had Space Invaders, maybe. But that's how that was my first console, was an actual joystick, just the one orange button for the left hand. And that's how I ended up playing video games. We just have a few more minutes left. If for those of you who texted and called in, we do appreciate it. Hopefully I didn't miss any calls, because I'm not looking at the phone. I'm just looking at the text board, because I'm horrible at multitasking. So I apologize. Oh, here we go. This was
1976.
It was Cops and Robbers.
From Atari.
Right. From Atari. Yeah, we've got a picture of it right here. Dustin found it. Cops and Robbers. If you go to a website called Museum of the Game, it looks like they've got some pictures of it there. Yeah, that is a basic arcade, isn't it? The cabinet and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Cops and Robbers. So there you go, caller. It was called Cops and Robbers. Caller. Texter, thank you for your question. And thank you for looking that up. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Since we've got just a few minutes left, we want to make sure we give out the information again about the event. So everything that you'd like the listeners to know about, where to go, how to find it, what to do when they get there.
Yeah, you can go to RetroSwapMidwest.com. A little bit of a mouthful, RetroSwapMidwest.com. That's where you can get your tickets. And it's right on the front page there. You just click it. It's through Eventbrite. It'll take you right to the Eventbrite page. And we're also, we have a Viva La Retro Instagram account and Facebook account. We'd love for people to jump in there. We're going to be doing some giveaways and some other fun stuff. And then also make sure you're paying attention to our sponsors, people that are close to us on this. It's Two Plumbers. They are a really fun arcade brewery. And then Filthy Games Room on Facebook is another one of our sponsors. They're also in the store there with us. And so lots of opportunities to come. But yeah, please come on out and help support what we're trying to do. I think it's going to just grow from here. We ran out of tables pretty quickly, and we want to just add to that and grow and grow. And there's other, you know, we want you to support all of it. We want you to support Toy Man, and we want you to support more Games Con, Mo Games Con, and all the other, you know, things that are happening, because the more that we come together on these things, the more fun opportunities we're going to be able to have. And, you know, it's just a win-win.
Yeah.
All, what is it? All boats.
All the rising tides, tide lift all
and
boats.
And the tides and the boats. And
everything's lifting.
Cops and Robbers.
You know the thing. That's
Atari.
Dustin, I appreciate you coming in tonight to talk about the event. And like I said, if you're one of those people listening right now who's like me, who always complains, there's nothing doing like this in St. Louis and St. Charles, you got to go out to these kind of events, because then we'll see more of those type of events happening. Dustin, I appreciate your time on a Sunday night. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Of course. We're going to take a very brief commercial break.
Yo, Joe!
Hi, this is Mary McDonald Lewis, and I was the voice of Lady J on G.I. Joe.
Hi, this is Bill Ratner. I'm the voice of Flint on G.I. Joe. And listening to Geek to Me Radio,
it's half the battle. G.I.
Joe against Cobra, the enemy. Welcome back to the show. Geek to Me Radio, heard here on the Big 550 every Sunday night. There's really no need for me to introduce this gentleman. Let's just get right into the interview, shall we? My next guest is a multi-award-winning actor and writer. He's renowned the world over for his talent and for his contributions to TV and film. And in my humble opinion, one of the funniest human beings currently drawing breath, Mr. John Cleese. I appreciate your time today, sir.
No, what do you mean, one of the...
Well, I mean, there's several people who I find funny. If I had to put a Mount Rushmore of comedic faces up, yours would certainly be right there in the Abraham Lincoln spot.
All right, I'll accept that. I like that very much. So tell me, well, what do you want to know? You can ask me anything you like, Jim.
Well, there's so much to cover, and I feel like we could have 2 hours together, and I don't think I'd scratch the surface. I do want to mention, of course, you're coming here to St. Louis in your live tour, An Evening with the Late John Cleese at the Factory here in St. Louis on the 16th of November. When you do these live shows, you've been doing so many of them. I guess you're still doing them, so you must get a thrill of performing in front of that live audience.
I very much like that because when you're working on television, you might have a studio audience, you know, but it's then it's all edited afterwards, and you will never see the feel the real impact. And of course, on film, that's more the case. So what is lovely about live performing is that it's so real. You stand out there in front of the audience, and you try and make them laugh, and when they do, you have a feeling of satisfaction, you know, mission completed. It's very satisfying, and provided that the theaters don't get too big, there's also a kind of intimacy which I like very much, and you don't get in any of the other media.
And you've been writing since 1962 with That Was the Week That Was, continued on at last the 1948 show, where you did acting as well, sketch comedy. Do you still find, because at the status you're at, you could just do acting, but I feel like you do so much writing, you must still get a great pleasure out of doing so.
Yes, I enjoy the writing. I enjoy the writing, oddly enough, more than the performing, because the writing is the creative bit. The performing is sort of completing the circle. But it's the moment when you actually see that you have a really good idea and how to go about it. I get a kind of buzz out of that that I don't usually get out of the performing. Although I got to say, at the end of the show, when the audience, gives us this usual ovation, there's a lovely feeling that you've given people a good evening.
Yeah. Yeah, I know so many people are excited about the fact that you're coming through here to St. Louis for this, and you're doing a tour all over. You'll be in, I believe, Rockford, Illinois, and you'll be down at the Grand Ole Opry in Nashville as well, which is inside our listening area.
That's curious, right.
at which point, because you've reached this level, obviously, now where, like I said, you're known the world over. Do you remember at what point in your career you no longer had to audition for things, where you were just offered parts?
I don't think I do remember a particular moment, because you see, in England, success came, I don't know if it's true now, but it came more slowly. Each year you became slightly better known, year by year by year, whereas in America, fame can come very, very fast, and you can say that was the show that did it. But in my case, there wasn't a particular one that did it, and very frequently when I start something new, like Monty Python or Fawlty Towers, it takes some time for people to decide that it's good, because it's different. It takes a little time for people to kind of catch up, and so it's getting more famous, better known, is gradual process, which is much easier psychologically, because you just get used to it a bit at a time, instead of some great rush when you suddenly become a public figure. I think it's very hard for people to handle it. It's much easier if it's a gentle process.
For example, your appearance in the Doctor Who episode City of Death, where you're in the art museum, were you a fan of the show and asked to be part of it, or did they reach out to you and say, hey, could you do this cameo for us?
Well, I knew Douglas Adams. I didn't know much about the show itself. And I knew Douglas Adams, and he at that point was one of the main writers on the show. So he said, would you like to do a cameo? And I said yes, and I'm delighted that that afternoon that I once spent has now been sustaining me for about 40 years.
So they haven't reached out to you for the big 60th anniversary for a cameo in their upcoming celebration of the show, though?
Well, let's say not yet.
Okay. Hopefully they will. That'd be awesome to see you back, especially if you're still looking at the same painting 60 years later.
Yeah, well, they're doing Spamalot. I think it's opening this week. I don't know if it's previews or lecture, but I may be the voice of God in that, so that would be fun. Be the only original member of the cast who's still doing the show.
Wow.
The case.
Wow, that would be. Wow. I want to ask about Fawlty Towers, too, because it's such a groundbreaking show. It's a huge part of my childhood. I grew up watching this on the local public network. It was tried to be remade for TV three different times, 1978 with Harvey Korman and Betty White, 83 with Bea Arthur, and 99 with John Larroquette. Do you think there's a reason why it never quite translated over to an American audience the way The Office did?
That's an awfully good question, and the answer is yes. You see, you have to start from my starting point, which is that very, very few people know what they're doing. And that's true in show business, but it's pretty much true wherever you go. The people at the top very frequently don't really know what they're doing. And that was very much the case with that, because, for example, the second series with Bea Arthur, when I heard, I was actually at a weekend party with a friend who had a beautiful house in the country, and there were some people there, and there were some American TV executives, and I said to them, what's going on? They said, oh, we've just bought the rights to remake Fawlty Towers in America. And I said, what? I hadn't heard this. I said, well, that's wonderful news. I wonder, are you going to make any changes? And they said, not really. Well, they said, we've made one change. We've written Basil out. And, of course, I can hardly speak. I mean, anything more stupid than that, let me imagine. But they wrote him out, and they gave his lines to Bea Arthur's as well as Sybil's lines, and surprise, surprise, it didn't work. So what I've noticed is that all these people are always very confident that they know how to do it. Actually, they don't. They don't have a clue. So I just keep going quietly. And on the whole, people come round to what I'm doing, but sometimes it takes a little bit of a time. I mean, the reviews for Fawlty Towers weren't at all good for the first two or three shows. And the same with Monty Python. I mean, the BBC, the guy in charge of the department making it, bumped into the director in the elevator and said, what is this Monty Python thing? I think it's awful. Is it supposed to be funny? Now, that was the guy who was head of the department of the BBC. So it takes a little time for people to get on board.
One of the awards you have is a Golden Globe for your role as Dr. Simon Finch Royce on Cheers, which for my money is one of the better episodes of that series when Diane was still part of the show. Was that a role that was, again, offered to you, or were you a fan of the series and reached out to them?
No, I was a fan of it already. I always loved Cheers. I thought it was a wonderful, wonderful series, particularly with Diane.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was extraordinarily good. I loved Ted Danson and those guys at the bar. What was it? Norman Cliff.
Yes.
I just loved it. So when they offered it to me, I jumped at it. But it was quite a worrying process because they kept rewriting it. I kept learning the script. And then the next day I discovered it had been cut. There was a new script. And by about day four, when they changed it yet again, I thought, God, I'm going to get muddled about what I'm actually doing. But then the recording went very well. Although they did, I'm the worst singer in the world. I'm just hopeless. And yet they gave me something from Gilbert Sullivan to be humming when I made my entrance. I thought, this is cruelty. But I managed to get it right. And then playing with those guys was great. It was a very happy experience.
So I assume we can hear no songs from you when you come here to the factory on November 16th to regale us in St. Louis. No singing.
No. I mean, I'm so bad. I was once in a Broadway musical. They gave me the part of an upper-class twit because I was could be funny doing that. And I wasn't allowed to sing. I was so terrible that I was only in the chorus numbers, and the musical director Stanley Lebowski, he went and hit a few notes on the piano. I told him I couldn't sing, and he said, "You're right. Learn the lines and mime." And I used to go on stage with the rest of the singers and just mime the words. I was not allowed to issue a speech.
Well, I mean, we all have our strength. Obviously, yours lies with acting and writing, the comedic chops. One of the I wanted to mention this one because I remember seeing it when I was in college. My English lit professor showed it to us, and I watch it every Halloween now. Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, you opposite Kenneth Branagh. What a amazing! I mean, the fact that we've got John Cleese's brain and Robert De Niro's body sounds like a dangerous plot to begin with. But that movie is such a that's probably one of my favorite adaptations. Did you enjoy that particular filming?
Yes, I found it really what's the word? An almost frightening business, because Kenneth Branagh, whom I like enormously, kept changing his mind about the way that he wanted me to play it. First of all, I did what I thought it was required. He said, "No, I want you to make it much smoother and much more harmonious." And so I worked on that for a time. And then when I got the set on the day and did it like that, he said, "No, I want it much more staccato, like Walter Winchell." And I thought that was what I was doing 3 weeks ago when you told me to. But what was fun about it is I thought, I don't want people, when I appear on the screen, to think, "Oh, he's funny." So I put some false teeth in and did a bit of extra makeup because I didn't want people to recognize me immediately. And I was successful. Several of my friends saw that film and didn't realize that I was doing that part.
Wow, that is impressive.
Yeah, I was really pleased. Professor, what was he? I can't remember his name. Walter.
Waldman, yeah.
Well, anyway, as I say, they didn't actually recognize me. When I asked them what they thought of the film, they told me, and they had no idea I'd been in it.
Well, that's high praise, I guess, if they didn't recognize you. Everything you did its job.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I think I was quite good at it. And I enjoyed sometimes a bit of straight acting. I mean, it's much easier than comedy, which nobody realizes. But if you talk to people, I remember talking to Michael Gambon, who just died a few months ago, is a wonderful actor. And he was quite adamant that comedy is much harder than straight acting. And most people don't realize that. They kind of think comedy is the easy option. But if you're doing straight acting, you just have to make good choices and then make that believable. If you're doing good comedy, really good comedy, then you've got to do all that and then add comedy technique, which some very good straight actors can't do. They don't know how to do it.
I'm a huge James Bond fan. I had my License to Kill on VHS, and there was your Schweppes commercial at the very beginning of it with the James Bond Too Much Violence in Cinema advertisement. And then you go up on to end up being Q in the Pierce Brosnan series. To be part of the James Bond franchise, what was that like for you?
It was absolutely lovely because I knew one or two of the people concerned, like Barbara Broccoli and Michael Wilson, who've been producing it for 300 years. Very nice guys. And they trusted me, so they allowed me to do a little bit of writing on my own scenes. So when I went on the set, I felt very, very happy with the dialogue. I didn't think, how do I say this? I thought, this is good stuff. And I adored working with Piers because he's a very, very nice man and totally relaxed and professional. So there's never any tension. And it sort of became quite easy because there was such a nice atmosphere on the set. And I was very touched. We shot it at Pinewood. And there were people working on the movie with me whose grandfathers had worked on Dr. No. So it was a lovely family thing. Unfortunately, that's all different now. I think Disney's taken Pinewood over, and the Bond movies are now shot in Prague in the Czech Republic. But it was a lovely experience, really, really one of my very best ones.
And I know we've got just a little bit of time left. There's so many. I wanted to talk to you about the Muppets and Time Bandits and obviously Monty Python. But I will ask you this because I've got the VHS copy of How to Irritate People. Did that come out of your series of educational sort subjects you produced on video by Video Arts? Did that kind of spring out of that for you?
No, Video Arts came a bit later. But Video Arts started in 72. It was the brainchild of a very clever man who was the wrote the theme paper for the Frost Report, which I used to do with Ronnie Barker and Ronnie Corbett. No, the How to Irritate was very, very early on, and I wrote it because I just married Connie Booth, mm-hmm. and I knew what a good comedy actress she was, so I wanted to write a sketch show in which she had some very good parts, and it worked well. It was a little amateurish at times because the recording circumstances were a bit troublesome. We didn't really have quite enough time for rehearsal, but I was still pretty pleased with some of it.
It's a thrill for me to talk to you. I've been a fan since I was a little kid. I appreciate your time, and hopefully I'll get to pop back and see you after the show when you come here to St. Louis next week.
That would be great.
Thank you so much.
See you then.
Take care.
Okay. Bye.
There he goes, John Cleese. What an amazing thing for me to be able to meet him, talk to him, interact with him. Want to make sure we tell you very quickly about the Greater St. Charles Convention and Visitors Bureau. Discover stcharles.com, our premier sponsor. If you missed Legends and Lanterns, you got a chance to go out for Christmas Traditions, which will be happening out there very soon. They start on the Friday after Thanksgiving and go all the way through Christmas Eve. Get out there, interact with some international gift givers that are from around the globe. Have some great food up and down Main Street. Check out some cool shops. Don't go to the mall on Black Friday. Go check out the city of St. Charles and see all the cool Christmas thing there is to do down there. Very proud to have them as our premier sponsor. That website, discoverstcharles.com. That's discoverstcharles.com. Thank you to Dustin. Thank you to John Cleese. Check out those tickets at the Factory in Chesterfield coming up just very quickly here. He'll be here on Thursday. Until next week, my friends. Thank you, Torquay. Good night.
Hey, kids. Are your parents about to buy you a shiny new toy from Amazon?
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
Well, don't be selfish. Share some of that money with us. Before going on Amazon, make sure to type in bit.ly/geektome in the web browser. It will look just like Amazon.com, except it'll say Referral Geek to Me Radio up top. And then when you check out, a tiny percentage will go to support the show without costing you 1 cent more. So before your parents get you that gizmo, gadget, or widget, make sure they type in bit.ly/geektome in the web browser.
bit.ly/geektome, bit.ly/geektome.